Angela Lansbury starring in Murder, She Wrote, South by Southwest. A white skyscraper looms at night. A row of flags hangs above a grand arched entrance at the top of a flight of steps. Guest stars in alphabetical order: Ray Baker, Cliff Bemis, Keith David, Harriet Sansom Harris, Richard Reel, John Vargas and Mel Harris as Sarah. A silver car parks in front of the building. The driver turns off the headlights and gets out, a middle-aged man with a jowly face and thinning hair. He wears glasses and a raincoat over his suit. He looks around and walks up the steps towards the arched entrance. The man stops on the steps and looks from side to side. He checks his watch and turns around. Behind him, someone wearing black leather gloves aims a gun at him and pulls the trigger. The man's body jolts and he throws his arms in the air. He tumbles down the stone steps. He lies face down on the pavement. Blood runs from his ear and stains the pavement. The splayed fingers of his right hand twitch. Produced and directed by Anthony Shaw. Later, several cop cars have arrived. The area has been cordoned off and forensics officers stand over the body. An unmarked car rolls up and three agents get out. One of them holds his ID badge and goes up to a man who's on the phone.
Who's in charge here?
You got him. FBI? Oh, the victim's ID pegged him as some kind of...
Peter Haywood, we know who he is.
So what is going on?
That's classified.
A woman's with some cops.
Who's that?
It's the witness. She saw the killer.
Is that right?
Yeah, and the killer saw her.
What's your name?
Sarah McLeish.
The FBI agent, Bartles, makes a note. The other guy watches him. Bartles walks over to Sarah McLeish, who has a German Shepherd.
Mrs. McLeish, my name is Bartles.
He saw me.
Who did?
The man who killed.
Can you describe him for me?
I don't like standing here. All these people. I'm...
I understand. Maybe you feel safer talking in the car. Come.
No, quiet, Hannibal.
Let's talk in the car.
Okay. I'm visiting Los Angeles and I was walking Hannibal and, you know, if Hannibal hadn't been with me, he might have killed me too.
You don't have to worry about that now. We'll look after you.
Ain't Hannibal.
Sarah gets in the back of the car with her dog, Hannibal. Bartles leans on the roof and calls to a fellow agent.
Connor. I want round-the-clock protection on this woman.
Yes, sir. What's your take on this?
Well, she's the sole witness, and he knows she saw him. If you were the killer, what would you do?
Takano gets in the driving seat. Nearby, a thick-set man of about 50 watches. He has neat brown hair, slightly greying. Takano drives away. The man studies the scene. At a station, passengers board a train.
Amtrak Sunset Limited, leaving for El Paso and Point East. Track 12.
All aboard!
Oh, my goodness. Oh, we're late. Hurry!
My only love.
Goodbye, Boris.
A man blows a kiss to his girlfriend as he gets on the train. Jessica Fletcher, a sprightly older woman, runs up.
Wait! Hold it! I'm going on this train.
You're going to have to hurry, ma'am, because the Sunset Limited leaves in about 2 minutes.
Yes, I know, and I'm so sorry, but I just have to get this on board.
A porter wheels her luggage up and hands an enormous trunk to a guy on the train.
I'll just put it in the corner here.
Perhaps over there would be better. It needs to be rather cool and dry.
Cool and dry.
Now, that would be just perfect. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad that animal is caged.
So am I. We don't carry animals, but they said to load him anyway. The owner said it's been trained to attack strangers. And I want to make sure I'm not one of them.
Right.
Jessica shows her ticket to a guard and boards the train. The thick-set man from the murder scene gets on after her. A steward shows Jessica to her compartment.
Oh, my. This is very cozy.
A deluxe sleeper.
Oh, I'm sure I'll be very comfortable. It's a long time since I took this train. Almost 30 years.
The bed is in here, ma'am?
Uh-huh.
And this is?
Oh, yes, I can see.
Are you going all the way to Florida, ma'am?
No, just to El Paso.
I almost forgot. Would you like the first sitting or the second sitting for supper this evening? 6:30 or 8:30?
I think the second sitting will be fine. I had a late lunch.
And your name is?
Mrs. Fletcher.
May you have a peaceful journey, Mrs. Fletcher.
Thank you.
The sleek silver train moves out of the station. Jessica sits in her compartment holding some papers. She looks out of the window and waves. Outside, a fat man and his wife try a key in the lock.
This doesn't seem to be working, Millie.
Tell me the other lady.
The key? Are you sure?
Hearing them, Jessica goes to the door and opens it.
Oh, dear, I'm terribly sorry. We thought this was C-16.
Oh, no, this is C-12.
We got confused, didn't we, Jack?
Yeah.
They all look the same.
Well, actually, the numbers are right next to the door.
Oh, of course they are, Jack. See?
Did you look down in that direction? I think I saw 16 down there.
It's nice to meet you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Jessica shuts the door, takes off her glasses and shakes her head. A bright evening sun shines low in a hazy sky. In the restaurant car, the fix-it man sits alone. A waiter pours him a glass of wine. Jessica comes in.
Good evening, madam. Are you waiting for someone?
No, just me.
Oh, well, if you don't mind sharing a table.
Jessica has neat, swept back fair hair.
Oh, hi.
Hello again. Isn't this train wonderful? Jack was just saying it's just like an old movie, weren't you, Jack?
That's right.
Yes, it is. Good evening.
Jessica sits opposite a woman.
I trust that this will be comfortable. I'll get you a menu right away.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Jessica Fletcher.
Judy Taylor.
Hello.
Judy is in fact Sarah McLeish. A serious-looking man walks in.
This way, sir.
He wears a black leather jacket. He's shown to a table where he sits and studies a menu. The train travels through the night. The fix-it man watches Sarah and Jessica.
So after Stephen died, I wasn't comfortable for the longest time traveling alone. Has that ever bothered you?
Oh, I won't say that, but I guess you get used to it. And on the positive side, you meet a lot of interesting people that way.
Well, I have tonight.
The guy in the leather jacket stares at Jessica for a moment. She drinks white wine.
Anyhow, I haven't seen my little nephew Charlie, well, since I left Denver, and that was almost a year ago. But I'm afraid of flying, so here I am.
And where does Charlie live?
Sanford, Florida.
Oh.
They look at two guys, one of whom is the one who left his girlfriend at the station. Boris.
They seem to be having a good time.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever.
I think so. Maybe too good a time, if you know what I mean.
Oh, Millie.
I think the young one's that tennis player, the one all the women chase after.
Yeah, he played at Wimbledon last year.
I don't know who the other man with him is, though.
He seems familiar to me.
Boris, a wavy-haired middle-aged guy with a stubbly chin, lifts his glass to them.
I don't think they knew each other before they got on the train.
Jessica smiles broadly.
Why are you laughing?
Well, it seems that we have something in common, Judy. We both like observing people, trying to see the truth behind the facade.
Have you ladies made a decision about dinner?
Oh, thank you.
The fix-it man.
Let's see, I'll have the garden salad vinaigrette to start with. Baked swordfish with shiitake mushroom sauce. And a bottle of your Chardonnay.
Very good, sir.
He sips some wine.
You never even thought about going back to the altar?
I usually say that I'm having too much fun to get married again. But the truth is, there's never been anyone that could fill Frank's shoes.
That's what I thought until...
Sarah looks coy.
Judy?
Well, who'd have thought that a romantic cabin next to a babbling brook would make it happen the second time?
Well, I'm very happy for you.
Oh, thanks. So, Jessica, where are you headed?
Well, I have to give a lecture in El Paso. So I thought I'd take the opportunity to study some of the local desert flowers along the way. I say study. Actually, I am no expert.
And what are you going to do with these flowers when you find them?
Well, I'll probably collect them, make some notes, and they'll probably end up, as they usually do, in a novel of mine.
Does that mean you're a writer?
I'm afraid so.
I'm sorry. I should have recognized your name. I'm just afraid I don't read many books.
Well, that's quite all right. Luckily, there are quite a few people who do.
But I must read something of yours. What is it you write about?
Murder. I write about murder.
Sarah knocks her red wine over.
Oh, I'm so sorry how clumsy.
No problem.
Oh.
No harm done.
I should go change. If the waiter comes, would you just tell him to leave my dinner and I'll be right back?
Oh, sure.
Thanks.
Sarah goes. Jack and Millie Ogden grin at Jessica.
Enjoy.
The guy in the leather jacket is in a toilet. Standing at a sink, he dries his hands with a paper towel and studies his face in the mirror. He picks up an automatic pistol from the side of the sink and sticks it in a holster on his hip. The guy, who has neat brown hair and a side parting, walks back into the restaurant car. He looks tense. As he passes Jessica, she studies him. He walks on down the corridor. Jessica continues to eat her dinner. The guy in the leather jacket goes to a compartment door and leans to it.
Mrs. Taylor?
He opens the door, peers into the compartment and walks on. The restaurant car is virtually empty. Boris sits drinking a large brandy. Jessica sits alone, finishing her dinner. A waiter walks in holding an envelope.
Is there Mrs. Judy Taylor in the car?
I have a message for Mrs. Judy Taylor.
Jessica looks up.
Is there Mrs. Judy Taylor in the car?
Here.
Jessica takes the envelope.
Excuse me, I'm not.
The waiter's gone. The steward walks up.
Excuse me. I think I better pay for both.
Oh, you don't have to pay now, ma'am. You just leave your voucher with me, write down your compartment number, and settle up at the end of the journey. The other lady already gave me her number.
Oh, well, then I'll do that. So, you have my friend's voucher?
Yes, ma'am.
May I see it?
Oh.
He shows it to her, and she reads the room and car number.
C-34. Thank you.
She hands hers and Sarah's cards back and a pen.
Thanks.
The steward goes and Jessica puts the envelope in her handbag. The thick-set man is sitting at his table dozing. Jessica gets up to go and notices Sarah's handbag on the table. She picks it up and walks out with it. Jessica slings her own bag over her shoulder. A man using crutches squeezes past her. He takes a cigar out of his mouth.
Sorry. Not easy getting around on these things. I'm looking for somewhere to sneak a smoke.
Oh.
Jessica walks on and he watches her. Down the corridor, Jessica bumps into Boris, who looks a bit woozy.
I'm so sorry I wasn't looking.
It's my fault.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say so, Mr.
Cădrescu.
Of course. You're Boris Cădrescu, the tennis coach on the Romanian national team.
I resign. Your newspaper reports are not always accurate. You know, since government left power, Romania can no longer support sports in the same way.
I'm sure. Well, I suppose every freedom comes at a price.
Sometimes I believe we pay too high a price for this precious American freedom. Drugs, crime. These are things we never saw in our country with communists.
And you're working here now?
No, not yet. But it will be soon, I know. Excuse me.
He goes and Jessica knocks on a compartment door.
Judy!
Jessica lurches and holds onto the wall as the train suddenly slows down and stops. A door opens and several stewards climb down carrying torches. Passengers look out of windows. Jessica opens a door and looks out with the steward.
Yeah, over there.
One of the passengers pulled the emergency. They saw someone fall from the train.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I got it.
Rather difficult to fall by accident, I would have thought, unless the door was open. But why would the door be open?
Mark, everything okay? Got
it. Yeah, all clear back here.
Find anything?
Nothing out here. False alarm. Clear. West side's clear.
Jessica looks up at a silhouetted hill. Between some pylons, a bright pink light flashes irregularly. Jessica looks at her watch. She reaches into her bag and takes out a yellow leaflet. She puts it on the ground with two stones on it. Printed on the leaflet is Choral Society Spring Schedule. Jessica looks up and sees the guy on crutches watching her stern-faced from a doorway. He turns and goes. In a corridor, a couple are talking to a steward. A sign beside a compartment door reads C-34. Jessica walks up to the door and unlocks it. Jessica goes into Sarah's compartment. The room is a mess with clothes strewn all over the place. The steward goes up to the thick-set man who's still dozing in the restaurant car. He pats him on the chest.
Sir, excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir. We need to prepare this table.
We in Tucson yet?
No, an unscheduled stop. Sir, dinner has been over for half an hour.
An excellent one it was, too. My compliments to the chef. Now, if you'll excuse a four-letter word, I must get to work.
He licks his finger, sticks it in the top of the wine bottle on his table, and carries it off. In Sarah's bathroom, Jessica dips her fingers into a pool of pale red liquid in the sink. She holds her fingers to her nose and sniffs them. The door handle to the compartment turns. Jessica observes this in the bathroom mirror. The balding waiter who gave her the envelope comes in holding a gun. Jessica's eyes widen. The man closes the door and looks at Jessica from behind. She's frozen to the spot.
All right, Mrs. McLeish. Where is it?
Stewards continue to search around the train. Passengers get back on the train. The balding waiter points his gun at Jessica, who has her hands up.
Miss McLeish, now you don't want to get hurt. So just tell me where it is.
Who is McLeish?
You are, lady. Sarah McLeish. Now we know that Judy Taylor's just your cover, so cut the ball.
But I'm not Judy Taylor.
Oh, and this isn't her compartment?
Yes, it is. But...
then stop wasting my time. Now you've got 10 seconds to give me an answer. So tell me where it is.
The thick-set man looks in.
Oh, Sarah, there you are.
5 seconds.
Sarah, I could really use your help here.
No more games, Mrs. McLeish. 3, 2, 1.
The thick-set man smashes the wine bottle over the waiter's head.
Good Chardonnay beats the right to bear arms every time.
Oh, thank you. He thought I was someone else.
Yes, Sarah McLeish. Or you may have met her as Judy Taylor. Either way, I don't believe that he's familiar with the top 10 bestseller list, Mrs. Fletcher. Richard Loomis, Los Angeles Times.
Oh, yes. I read your articles on the Chinese illegal immigrant trade. Oh, very thorough.
6 weeks undercover. If I never eat dim sum again, I'll be a happy man. So, do you know where Sarah McLeish is?
Well, if, as you say, her alias is Judy Taylor, I haven't seen her since she left the dining car.
Well, he doesn't have an ID, and I don't think that he works for Amtrak.
Well, you seem very familiar with what's going on around here. I mean, do you know who he is or what he was after?
Well, I know that I don't want him waking up and holding a grudge.
He grabs the unconscious man by his ankles and drags him out of the compartment. As the train trundles along, Loomis opens a door and tosses the man out into the dirt beside the tracks. The man comes to and looks up blearily. Jessica empties the contents of Sarah's handbag onto a table. She picks up a Game Boy console and switches it on. She jabs at the buttons on the electronic game, then puts it down and picks up a photo of Sarah with her German Shepherd. She stares at it.
Just a moment.
Jessica puts the things back in the brown handbag and puts it aside, then goes to the door.
Who is it?
Loomis.
Oh, come in.
Our gun-toting friend is hitchhiking the rest of the way. So, why did he think that you were Sarah McLeish?
The envelope.
Because of this. Now, he came into the dining car asking for Judy Taylor, and she wasn't there, so I took it.
Then he found you in her compartment, and 2 and 2 made 3. If he thought you were McLeish, Mrs. Fletcher, he may not be the only one. You may still be in danger.
Wouldn't be the first time. But what about Judy? I mean, Sarah.
I didn't see her.
I don't mean that. Why is she in danger, and why is she traveling under an assumed name?
A couple of weeks ago, I got a call from some government whistleblower named Peter Hayward. I figured $1,000 hammers, you know, the usual, but I did agree to meet him night before last downtown. Well, the Hollywood freeway was bumper to bumper, as usual, so I was late.
And you missed him.
Well, you could say that, but someone else didn't. He had a .38 caliber slug in the back of his cranium.
Oh, sounds like a professional.
I smell a major story here, Mrs. Fletcher. Federal snitch silence, you know, something like that.
And Sarah?
She witnessed the murder. One of the LAPD guys told me what she said before the FBI took her into protective custody. Seems she was walking her dog when she saw the killer leaning over the body. Now, he took something from Hayward, and when he stood up, he saw her. She says that he stared at her for just a moment and ran away.
And now they want to silence Sarah. But who?
Well, that's what I'm here to find out. Let's just hope that it isn't the FBI.
Now, you said that she was walking her dog. Was that a German Shepherd?
Oh, you're good.
Well, I saw it in the baggage car. You know, in all likelihood, Sarah isn't on the train anymore.
You think she got scared and jumped off the train? Well, that's possible. She was afraid of being killed.
She wasn't scared when she went to her compartment. She never would have taken the time to wash the wine off her sleeve. And she expected to go back to the dining car.
But how do you know?
Because she left her purse there. I think that Sarah has been kidnapped, or even worse.
We'd better make sure that she's absolutely not on this train first.
Well, you take the front, and I'll meet you back here.
Right.
Loomis goes. Jessica walks along a corridor.
C-22.
Millie and Jack look out of their compartment.
Oh, say, Jessica, did you see all those men get off the train when we stopped?
Oh, yes, I did.
Jack said they were looking for something, isn't that right, Jack?
You're right, honey.
Yeah, well, they thought somebody fell off the train.
It's just like in that old movie. You know, Jack, the one with Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray.
Double identity.
A double indemnity. Anyway, it turned out to be a false alarm. Excuse me.
The guy with crutches sits in a dark compartment.
Bradley?
Jessica comes in and turns on the lights.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disturb you.
Oh, no, not at all. Come on in.
He puffs on a cigar.
I apologize. The only place I could find. I'd have stepped off for a smoke when the train stopped, but...
You might have been left behind.
Yes.
Well, I have to get back.
She goes to the door.
Shall I leave you in the door?
I'd rather you didn't.
Jessica goes. A door opens behind Loomis, who stops and looks back. The door quickly closes. Loomis walks on. Jessica has the contents of Sarah's bag on the table.
Where is it, Mrs. McLeish? Where is what?
She rummages inside the bag.
Who is it?
Jessica opens the door. Loomis staggers in with a bloodstain on his chest. He collapses.
Oh, my God.
A train station.
Watch your step.
Jack and Millie get off in their dressing gowns.
Oh, dear.
Yes. All passengers except those in car C. I repeat, will all passengers except those in car C remain on the train? All passengers except those in car C.
Excuse me. What's happening, Sheriff?
Hold on here, boys.
Just short delay, that's all. Just take it easy. We'll get you back on your journey as soon as we can. Right over here.
It's an investigation.
Whatever you say, dear.
They look up and see a black and white chopper with FBI written on the bottom.
FBI! See? I told you so.
Right here.
Boris is with his young friend about to get off the train. He sees the FBI chopper and his face falls. He retreats back into the train as the other passengers get off. The chopper lands. Agent Bartels gets out of the chopper. He joins Agent Takano and another agent.
Okay, people, I need everyone to move down to the engine platform. We've got work to do.
Let's check over here first.
Step to the rear of the platform, please.
Jessica is with a uniformed cop in an interview room.
Now let's get this straight. That news guy was shot right outside your door, and you never heard it?
That's right.
Uh-huh. Miss Fletcher, I appreciate your help. Now, I just want to make sure you're telling us everything we need to know.
Everything that I can remember.
Uh-huh.
Would you like me to repeat it?
Not just yet, Mrs. Fletcher. Thank you, Sheriff. I'll take it from here.
Whoa! I don't take orders from anybody in Harlan County, especially...
Bartles shows his badge.
Feds. What are you doing here?
National security. And we could use your help, Sheriff. We'll need written statements from all the passengers on the victim's train car. Thanks.
Takano opens the door and the sheriff goes. Bartles sits beside Jessica.
Aldrick Bartles, FBI. A special agent in charge of the Los Angeles field office. Now, let's start from the top, shall we?
Certainly. Your agency has managed to lose the only witness to the murder of a federal employee who was going to leak information that could compromise our government.
Where did you get all this?
On the train.
I don't know where she is. Okay, yes, I lost her, but... No, I'll get her. Whatever it takes.
The guy in the leather jacket hangs up.
All right, Mrs. Fletcher. There's still something that puzzles me. When you realized the witness was missing after the train was stopped, why didn't you report it to the security officer on the train?
Because at that time, I didn't know that she was missing. Loomis and I were making sure that she wasn't still on the train when he was killed.
You weren't sure. In other words, you were suspicious.
Well, now, that's your word, not mine.
What word would you use, Mrs. Fletcher?
Mr. Bartles, I was worried about a woman that I had befriended at dinner. There was an accident with the wine, and she left the table. She said she'd be right back. It was only when she didn't return that I went looking for her. Because I was worried, not suspicious.
But you're suspicious now, aren't you, Mrs. Fletcher?
No, Mr. Bartles. Now I'm even more worried.
All right, Mrs. Fletcher. You can return to the train and leave everything to us.
Oh, but what about Sarah?
Who?
Mrs. McLeish, sir, the witness.
Mrs. McLeish is our concern now. I suggest you forget about her. I said forget about her before you disappear off a train. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes. You made your point very clearly.
I want you to leave it to us and get on that train and go to El Paso just like you planned to. You do that, and I assure you no harm will come to you. You have my word on it.
Is that what you told Sarah?
Bartles and Takano share a look and Jessica goes. In the luggage compartment, Sarah's German Shepherd Hannibal lies in his cage. The luggage clerk is doing some paperwork. Jessica comes in.
Hello. Remember me?
Insulated container, cool and dry.
Exactly. I would like to ask you to do something for me. I'd like you to take my insulated container and put it on the platform at El Paso to be picked up by Mr. Cyrus Davis. Could you do that for me?
Oh, sure I could. Thanks.
She pays him.
Cyrus Davis.
Right.
She looks at the German Shepherd.
Let sleeping dogs lay, eh, ma'am?
What is your name?
Jarvis Bean, ma'am. My father was Jarvis Bean. I'm Jarvis Bean.
Well, Jarvis, It's evident to me that you're a man who knows his trains.
Been riding them all my life.
That's what I thought. But could you tell me how many miles we've traveled since the train was stopped?
How many miles? I couldn't be sure about that.
But could you tell me what our average speed was?
Average? Oh, I'd figure 50 miles an hour.
50 miles an hour? Uh-huh. Well, now, we started at 10:35 and we arrived at 1:31. So let's say our journey was 3 hours at 50 miles an hour.
150 miles.
150 miles, Jarvis. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jessica frowns at the dog and gets off the train. On the platform, she looks around. She goes up to a tall guard in a peaked cap.
Excuse me.
Can I help you?
Yes. I wondered if you might have a map of this area.
A map? Certainly. Come on in my office. We're at Hanay, right here.
Uh-huh. Now, if we were to travel 150 miles west, would there be a town there?
Well, let's see. Will 140 miles do? Because Agua Verde is the only town anywhere near there.
And there's nothing else there?
No, nothing. Most of this is government or reservation land, belong to the Indians.
What is that symbol right next to the town?
That's some kind of beacon.
And what is the best way to get there?
Well, you see that old car out there? I could rent you that if you're coming back.
Oh, that's very kind, but unfortunately, I don't drive.
You don't drive?
And there's no other way to get there?
Nope. Unless you're willing to take the bus.
Well, what time does it get here?
Bartles comes in.
The train can leave in 5 minutes.
He stares at Jessica.
You need something?
5 minutes. I thought we agreed you'd be on it.
We did?
Takano, let's see that Mrs. Fletcher gets safely back on the train, shall we?
Jessica walks to the door. On board the train, she walks along a corridor. Takano walks up to Bartles on the platform.
Sir, the helicopter's ready.
Bartles glances up at the train, then goes with Takano. Rotor blades spin as the chopper prepares for takeoff. Bartles is sitting beside a window. The chopper rises into the black night sky. The train slowly pulls away from the station. Jessica stands alone on the platform with a bag and a handbag over her shoulders. She walks over to the station building. Someone wearing pale jeans walks up and stands watching her. Day. Jessica is on the phone.
If you could pick up the container at the station, thank you. Don't worry, Cyrus. I'll be there for the lecture. Well, there was some trouble on the train. No, everything is fine, but I seem to have lost a friend of mine. Well, not exactly lost, but... Look, I'll explain later. Right. Bye.
The guard walks up.
It's here.
What?
The bus.
Oh, good. And thank you for the use of your phone.
Jessica looks out of a window at the bare patch of ground outside, then picks up her bags.
Are you sure you're going to be safe?
Well, why shouldn't I be?
Traveling alone?
Oh, it's a bus, Mr. Phipps, not a stagecoach. I see someone's rented your car.
Yep.
The bus travels over a bridge and heads along a road through mountainous terrain. A young Native American boy crawls under a seat and picks up a ball. He goes and sits next to his mum across the aisle from Jessica, who watches, smiling. Two guys with crew cuts sit next to each other, smiling. Jessica glances round at her fellow passengers. The Native American boy hands the ball to his mum and looks across the aisle at Jessica. She winks at him, and they both smile.
Hello. What's your name?
Joe.
Just Joe.
Just Joe?
Not just Joe. Joe.
Do you like to play games, Joe?
He sits next to her and she hands him the Game Boy.
Have you ever seen this one?
Sure.
I'm not very good at it. Maybe you can do better.
Joe sits playing with the Game Boy and Jessica smiles at Joe's mum. Bartles is with a fellow agent at a burger stall.
Downtown Los Angeles, presently.
Who was this? Are you a Democrat or a Republican? He answered, yes, sir. Which would you like me to be?
Sir.
Takano, can't this wait till I finish eating?
It's Mrs. Fletcher, sir. She wasn't on the train at El Paso.
I knew she was going to be a pain. Where did Guzman say she got off?
He didn't. Ask him. We can't raise him, sir. He's not answering his pager, and he's missed the last two check-ins.
Get me Guzman's file and run a financial report. Every dollar he's got or spent in the last 5 years. He never was a team player. I want him and that Fletcher woman found now. Come on.
On the bus, Joe rapidly presses the buttons on the Game Boy with his thumbs. Jessica's dozing.
Excuse me, ma'am?
Jessica wakes.
Didn't you want Aqua Verde?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
It's coming up.
Jessica sees a beaten-up old sign. No admittance. Property of U.S. government. Trespassers will be prosecuted. Jessica glances at the guys with crew cuts who look like servicemen. The bus drives into the small town of Aqua Verde. Mountains rise up in the distance. A small crowd is gathered at the bus stop, where the bus stops. A Native American man with a long ponytail walks across the street to meet Joe and his mum from the bus. Jessica gets off with them. Joe's still playing with the Game Boy.
Time to give it back now, Joe.
I'd like you to borrow it for a while.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Couldn't do that.
Dad!
Oh, but I insist.
Mum smiles at Dad.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mrs.
Fletcher.
Jim Sunrise. This is my wife, Pearl.
Hello.
What do you say, son?
Thank you, Mrs. Fletcher.
You're very welcome.
Can I give you a ride?
Oh, no, thank you. I need to walk. But perhaps you could suggest a good motel.
Motel? There's an old hotel about 3 blocks up. Tell Dottie I sent you. She'll take care of you.
Dottie? Thanks very much.
She notices some servicemen.
There's level 3.
Yes, sir.
A guy in jeans and a t-shirt gets in the back of a Humvee. A guy in camo gear gets in the driving seat. Written on the door is U.S. government. A green car drives up, and the occupant observes Jessica. A couple of old-timers play checkers on the porch of Dottie's hotel.
See what you're gonna do with that.
How about that?
Jessica walks into the clapboard building. She steps into an old-fashioned lounge and looks around. She steps past high-backed wood-framed chairs with brown upholstery. She goes to reception, where a thin woman is standing.
Good morning.
The woman stares at her.
Wait a minute. It can't be.
Killerman, Grafton, Francis Fletcher. Yes, I thought so. That's you, isn't it, J.B.?
I'm afraid so. You must be Dottie. Jim Sunrise said to say hi.
Are you working on a story?
Oh, well, first, I'm working on a bed for tonight.
Of course. Just fill this out, and I'll need a credit card.
Did my friend Sarah check in yet?
Who?
Sarah McLeish. Sometimes she uses her pen name, Judy Taylor.
Oh, I get it. Another writer.
She was to meet me here.
No, not here. I can call you when she gets here if you like.
Oh, good.
Dottie runs Jessica's credit card through the credit card machine and punches a number in. An LED message flashes, processing. In an FBI communications center, Jessica's details appear on a screen. An operative types, location. Searching flashes on screen. At the burger stall, Bartels is reading a paper. Takano comes over with a printout.
We've got her, sir.
Bartels looks at the printout.
Agua Verde?
That's the last place I wanted to be. Let's go.
Jessica sits on the bed in her hotel room and makes a phone call.
Lieutenant McCraney, please.
In the city, McCraney's with cops arresting some men. He answers his cell phone.
McCraney!
Mackey, it's Jessica Fletcher.
Hey, long time no see. I want a statement on my desk today. Today?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, Jessica, you in town?
I'm in Arizona. I don't think I'll be in Los Angeles for a while.
You promise to let me buy you lunch next time you're in town.
Well, I haven't forgotten. Listen, Mackey, I need a favor.
Yeah, shoot.
I need to find out about a murder. A victim who was killed in downtown Los Angeles a few nights ago. His name is Peter Hayward.
I left my number at your office. Will you call me back?
You got it.
The guys in checked shirts and cowboy hats sit at the long counter of a restaurant. They stare at Jessica as she comes in. Looking smart in a blue top and pink jacket and trousers, Jessica looks a little uncomfortable. She composes herself and sits at the end of the counter. A large waitress stands behind the counter wearing a white apron.
Coffee?
Oh, decaf, please.
Yeah, the decaf.
Regular will be fine.
Not in this place, it ain't.
Pay no attention to him, hon. Some tea?
Oh, thank you.
So, how long are you in town for?
Oh, just a couple of days. My friend is staying here with me. We're looking for Flora.
Don't reckon I know her.
Oh, flowers. I collect flowers. And my friend Sarah started off without me this morning. Perhaps she came in here? She's about 5'8", brown hair.
Nope.
The guy looks at the photo.
Well, I seen her.
Where was that?
Drugstore last week.
And she was with Elvis, right?
Oh, come on, don't start that again. You know that was an honest mistake. Heck, far, you know that could have happened to anybody.
Anybody who was blind drunk.
I was not blind drunk when I saw her.
I bet Sarah only came into town last night. She's probably out hiking already. Which way are the railroad tracks?
South of town. But don't go wandering on government property.
That's where those cattle up and vanished last fall.
50 head. Just like that.
And what does the government have out there?
I heard it's biological weapons. They test them on cows.
They're studying aliens, if you ask me. And I ain't talking about no Mexicans, neither.
Nobody goes out there.
Jessica looks forewarned. In bright sunshine, she walks along by the railroad tracks wearing a sun hat and sunglasses and with her bag slung over her shoulder. She stops and picks up the yellow leaflet that she left by the tracks when the train stopped the night before.
Give a hoot, don't pollute.
Nearby in scrubland, Jim Sunrise stands watching Jessica. He's wearing a sheriff's uniform. He gets in a 4x4 and drives down a slope to see Jessica. He passes a sign reading, No admittance, United States government.
Mrs. Fletcher.
Well, Sheriff Sunrise.
What are you looking for?
Well, a Fallujah paradoxa.
What's that?
Well, it's a little white flower. Actually, the common name is Apache plume.
I don't know it. Maybe because I'm Navajo.
Well, it's extremely drought tolerant.
When the guys down at the diner told me that there was some nutsy lady going out in the desert on foot, I didn't believe it.
I'm not so nutsy.
Well, there's no argument there, but you're about ready to enter a restricted government area. Bad idea. Let me give you a ride.
What is in there?
I don't ask and they don't tell.
Jessica smiles. Jim drives her back to town. They stop outside the sheriff's office. Young Joe sits on a table piled up with blankets. He's playing with the Game Boy.
I'll never forgive you for that.
Well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. How are you doing, Jill?
Hi, Miss Fletcher.
Jack and Millie Ogden drive up.
Jessica! Yoo-hoo!
Thanks for the ride.
Jack and Millie are in a convertible.
Hi.
What a surprise.
We're on our way up to Sedona.
Jack's such a romantic. It's our 20th anniversary tomorrow, and we're staying at the Mud Baths.
They're hot springs, dear.
Private tubs. Oh, Jessica, are you okay? We heard you couldn't find your friend Sarah.
Oh, yes. I just stopped off here to study some of the local wildflowers before my lecture in El Paso on Saturday.
You're giving a lecture?
Yes, at Wyndham College.
Oh, Jack, we got to go hear Jessica.
Now, Millie, who said we were invited?
It's open to the public, right?
Well, yeah.
And don't you like to see a friendly face or two in the crowd, Jessica? See, Jack.
Alrighty then. Saturday.
See you there.
Bye.
The dowdy green car pulls up across the street. Inside is the serious-looking guy from the train, now without his leather jacket.
Think before you speak, Jessica.
Jessica goes. The guy watches her and drives off. Jessica's hotel room has been turned over, bedding and clothes strewn everywhere. Jessica walks in.
Good heavens!
She puts down her hat and bag and answers the phone. McCraney's calling from his car.
Hello?
Jessica, what the hell have you gotten into?
It's hard to be sure.
Feds are all over this case, like white on rice.
Well, that I knew.
How long have I managed to get so far Hayward's DMV record? Born 42646. Current address is 45 Yucca Street, Agua Verde, Arizona.
45 Yucca Street, Agua Verde?
Jessica walks up by a house and peers in the windows. The place has been ransacked, as if someone was searching for something. Furniture lay overturned and papers are strewn all over the floor. Jessica goes up to a glass door and looks it up and down. Jessica slides the glass door open and enters the house through the kitchen. She looks around, frowning. She goes to a desk and looks through some papers. She picks up a swipe card and holds it up. In the middle is a circular crest with an eagle on it. Printed on the card is National Security Agency, Peter Hayward, Security Clearance 3.
NSA.
Someone wearing boots and jeans walks into the house. Jessica takes some photographs from a pouch and looks at them. One shows Peter Hayward with Sarah and her dog in a forest.
Sarah.
Written on the back is, "With my darling Sarah, Mount Palmer." The guy in the leather jacket walks in.
What are you doing here, Mrs. Fletcher?
She turns sharply.
Well, I could ask you the same question.
You'd be wasting your breath.
He reaches into his back pocket and pulls out an ID badge, which he holds up. He steps up to Jessica.
Ron Guzman, FBI.
I'm here on official business.
Well, then you'll be able to show me your search warrant.
Hey, if you weren't smart, I wouldn't have followed you here in the first place.
Look, I assume that you were assigned to protect Sarah on her journey. I watched you follow her out of the dining car, and then...
She disappeared into thin air.
And obviously, you haven't found her yet.
No, and that doesn't look real good for my future at the Bureau. But maybe if you and me work together, we'll both get what we're after.
Aren't you the one who let Sarah down in the first place and nearly got me killed as a result?
Do you know where she is, Mrs. Fletcher?
I'm not sure that I trust you with that information. If you will excuse me, Agent Guzman.
Look, all I'm asking is that you contact me if she turns up.
He holds up a card. She snatches it off him and goes. He clenches his jaw. In Agua Verde, a soldier stands by a Humvee watching people get off a bus. Jessica is amongst them.
Yeah, I got it.
Jessica walks over to the soldier, smiling. She holds up Peter Hayward's swipe card with her finger over his name.
Good afternoon.
This way, miss.
She gets in the back of the Humvee. The soldier closes her door, gets in the front, and drives away. Sitting in the back, Jessica looks a bit nervous. The Humvee drives up by a sleek modern building with sloping walls. Jessica gets out of the Humvee and walks along a wide path towards the building. Suited men and smartly dressed women come and go. Jessica watches two women enter the building by sliding a swipe card into a slot. A door swings open and the women enter. Jessica holds up Hayward's swipe card. She slides it into the slot in a freestanding metal box and the door opens for her. She enters. Inside, the building is open-planned. White walls support walkways on several levels. Jessica walks across a circular floor pattern with a palm tree design on it. A balding man observes Jessica from an upper level. Now suited, he's the man who posed as a waiter on the train. Jessica walks on, and he leaves his vantage point. Jessica creeps into an open-plan office area. Seeing two security guards, she busies herself by writing on a form clipped to a partition. The security guards eye her as they walk past. She smiles and nods at them, and they walk on. Jessica slips into a cubicle. She sits at a computer and types. On screen it reads, National Security Agency, Communications Intelligence, InfoSec, SIGINT. Beside enter password, Jessica types, Hayward. Accessing system flashes on screen, then access denied. The balding man is watching. Jessica turns to see him.
Come with me.
He and the security guards escort her.
If you still think that I'm Sarah McLeish, you're mistaken. Now maybe you can tell me what you wanted on that train.
Save it for the section chief, lady.
Who's that?
They go into a busy office.
Get this to SIGINT in Washington immediately.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Wilder.
Yes, Radley, what is it?
The intruder, sir.
Wilder is the guy with crutches from the train.
Mrs. Fletcher, I am not going to apologize for the way that you were just treated. This facility is classified top...
You did exactly what I expected.
What?
I wanted to find out who was in charge here. You. But of course I hadn't realized that we had already met. I have no doubt that had I called for an appointment, I would still be sitting in my hotel room until the end of the millennium.
He raises his eyebrows.
Let's talk. What do you want?
I want to know why Peter Hayward was going to the press and what is going on here at the NSA.
I don't know.
Judging from what I've learned, this is a communication station.
We simply download information from satellites. We pass it on to the appropriate agencies.
Including spy satellite data for the Pentagon, right?
I'm not allowed to confirm that. You know, Mrs. Fletcher, maybe you can help us. Hayward was one of our top InfoSec analysts.
Oh, which in English means?
Information system security. It's what the NSA does. We protect all U.S. classified communications. Hayward was a cryptographer going through a very messy divorce, mentally a little erratic.
What exactly did he steal?
Who told you anything was missing?
Radley. When he threatened to kill me on the train if I didn't return it.
Mrs. Fletcher, if you have anything of Hayward's, it could be of vital national importance. You would be helping your country by giving it back to us now.
Well, given Hayward's expertise, I assume it's some kind of codes that you're missing?
Wilder looks down.
It only makes the situation worse if any of this ever gets into the press.
I just think of the embarrassment to the NSA. I mean, it's so much simpler now that both Hayward and his press contact have been silenced.
That's not how we operate.
Isn't it?
Who do you work for?
Sarah McLeish.
I knew it.
Whom I happened to befriend on the train that evening. You see, by witnessing a murder, she may have been kidnapped or worse, and all you care about is your spy codes. I can assure you, Mr. Wilder, that I will not stop looking for her until I know that she's safe. Now, I would like a ride back to town, please.
Wilder looks at Radley and points for him to follow Jessica. He watches, frowning. Evening light filters through the window into Jessica's otherwise dark bedroom. The window is wide open, and a breeze billows in the neck curtains. Jessica walks in and switches on the light. She's surprised to see Agent Bartle sitting on the two-seater couch. He waves.
Do come in, Mr. Bartles.
Where's Sarah McLeish?
Perhaps she's staying with her nephew in Florida.
The nephew was a cover story for the train ride, just like the name Judy Taylor.
Well, you'll be glad to hear. She was very convincing.
Mrs. Fletcher, I am just as concerned as you are about finding your friend.
Really?
Yes, for some years, the Bureau has been trying unsuccessfully to track this organized spy ring that has infiltrated several government agencies.
And you believe that Sarah may be able to help?
It's possible that Hayward's death may be connected. Now, if that's so, McLeish is the only one alive who can identify any one of them.
Your concern for Sarah is touching, but let's make this quick, shall we? As I told Agent Guzman, I don't know where Sarah is, and as I told Mr. Wilder, I don't have any satellite codes.
Bartle smiles.
Yes, the satellite codes.
Well, it's been a long day, and I'm about to have a hot, relaxing bath. Is there anything else you want to know before you leave?
Yes. Do you know where Agent Guzman is right now?
Didn't you send him to Agua Verde?
I'll take that as a no.
Tell me, how did you find me here if Guzman didn't tell you?
Nowadays, Mrs. Fletcher, we're all part of one happy electronic family.
He goes, then it dawns on Jessica.
My credit card.
Jessica runs herself a bath. She swishes her hand around in the water, then straightens up.
That's it.
Jessica walks round the bed, picks up the phone, and calls Dottie in reception.
Is that you, JB? She never made it.
What?
Your friend.
Oh, right. Well, it gives me more time to work on my book.
I knew you were doing a story.
Dottie, I need a little help with my research.
My pleasure. What do you need?
Riverbank flowers.
Have you ever heard of intra-agency cooperation? It looks like you're trying to make me look stupid.
We're trying to moderate...
Shut him up, Wilder, now!
On a bridge.
Now, let me get this straight. One of your top guys turns up dead, and you forget to tell us that he's run off with a bunch of codes that are still missing. And I have to find this out from a civilian who you can't help spilling your guts to.
I thought we could get the codes back before it became public knowledge.
Jeez. Before Washington finds out you mean. So you send your Mickey Mouse head of security over here to get him back, and he kills Hayward.
Hey, I didn't kill him.
When I want to talk to you, I will look at you. But you know, for once, I believe you. Because that would have been the smart thing to do. And you'd have your codes back. But no. Now we have a killer on the loose who's probably out there right now trying to sell off whatever it was Hayward stole. Now, what kind of value do these codes have on the open market?
I think $10 million minimum.
What the hell could be worth all that?
Encryption data for every single U.S. military satellite. It falls into the wrong hands.
Wilder limps to his car with Radley. Bartles and Takano go to their car. Day. Dottie and Jessica are in a car parked near a woodland creek.
Not exactly the Mississippi, but it's the only creek near Mount Palmer.
Well, thanks for the ride, Dottie.
I'll be back around midday.
Great, thanks.
Wearing trainers, jeans, and a blue jacket, Jessica gets out of the car. Dottie drives off. Holding the photograph that she found in Hayward's house, Jessica walks across a bridge over the creek. Up a slope is a cabin. Jessica checks the photo. The cabin is like the one behind Hayward, Sarah, and her dog in the picture. Jessica walks up to the cabin, which has stone walls and a wooden roof. She steps onto the porch, which has stone columns supporting the roof. Sarah walks up. She stops and smiles at Jessica, who turns to her.
Jessica. Oh, thank God you're here. Oh, I've been so frightened.
They hug.
It'll be okay.
They go into the cabin.
Sarah, You weren't just a witness to Peter Haywood's murder, were you? He was the lover that you told me about, wasn't he?
Well, Jessica, you have no idea how much I wanted to tell you the truth on the train.
Jessica nods. Sarah takes the photo of her and Haywood from her and looks at it.
I saw him lying there. There was blood everywhere. And that man, I was afraid he was going to kill me.
Sarah sits.
Sarah, listen, if you want me to help you, you'd better start at the beginning. Now, Peter had gone to meet Richard Loomis.
Yeah. He told me to wait at the hotel while he went to the meeting. But Loomis called the room and said he'd been delayed in traffic. So I went to tell Peter to wait. And just as I got there, I heard the shot.
Oh, Sarah.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
The killer was standing over Peter and I saw him.
Why didn't you tell the FBI that you knew Peter?
Well, I was afraid the NSA was behind this.
You better tell me what Peter was going to tell Loomis and why he stole the codes.
Who said that?
Kevin Wilder.
Oh, Peter's idiot boss.
That's a lie, Jessica. Peter was the best analyst the NSA ever had. A genius. I don't really understand how it works, but Peter told me that he found a flaw in our satellite codes. And he was worried that another government might find out, or terrorist, and have access to all of our classified information.
And Wilder knows this?
Peter told him months ago. He said it was too expensive to reprogram all the satellites. He said he should just be quiet about it.
So Peter decided to go public?
Yes. He went to the Pentagon first, but they thought he was just a troublemaker. So Peter made a copy of the codes to show Loomis exactly what the problem is. I wasn't going to give them to him. It was just a demonstration, he said.
Someone who knew about the codes wanted to stop Peter before he got to Loomis.
Yes. I saw him again, Jessica, on the train. The man who killed Peter. That's why I got off.
Agent Guzman drives up outside in the green car and gets out.
Mrs. McLeish!
I know you're in there.
I just want to put you back under our protection.
They look out of the window.
That's Agent Guzman of the FBI.
He cocks a pistol.
But that's him, Jessica. That's the man who killed Peter.
They share a worried look. Jessica looks out of another window.
Is that your car outside?
Yeah. Let's go.
They go out.
I'm coming in, Mrs. McLeish. Just take it easy. Damn!
Sarah speeds off in her white Jeep Cherokee with Jessica beside her. Guzman gets in his car, reverses up and drives after them. On a dirt track...
You're sure he's with the FBI?
Yeah, he's out of the Los Angeles field office. His boss, Special Agent Bartels, confirmed it last night.
The government's behind this.
Not necessarily.
The vehicles kick up clouds of dust as they speed round a bend.
Yeah, they wanted to shut Peter up, and now they're after me.
I think that Guzman is acting without FBI authorization, judging from what Bartle said.
It doesn't make him any less deadly.
No, but if we could get to the right people with the right information, Guzman killed Peter, you'd be safe.
I don't know who to trust.
Well, I do. When we met, I was going to meet my friend Cyrus Davis. He used to work for the Justice Department. I think he can help us.
They speed through the countryside with Guzman close behind them.
If we could just get to El Paso.
It's easier said than done.
Guzman drives alongside them.
Take a left.
Are you crazy?
Trust me.
Sarah takes a left and Guzman veers round to the right. Sarah drives the Jeep Cherokee into the creek and heads along it. Guzman drives into the creek and tries to follow, but the green car gets stuck in the mud. The green car's back wheels spin. Guzman gets out and watches Sarah drive out of the creek and back onto the track.
Where is?
Sarah drives along a desert road towards mountains. At the NSA headquarters, Radley walks up to Bartles and to Carl.
Agent Bartles, got a minute?
Not unless you can tell me where to find me, please.
I might.
I'm listening.
Or I want you to know that I advised Wilder against us acting on our own.
Sounds like El Salvador all over again.
What are you talking about?
Our friend Radley here worked for the CIA when a death squad he organized killed three nuns, including a U.S. citizen.
Is that right?
I didn't order the hits, and I advised against our involvement with right-wing extremists.
That's not how Washington saw it. They fired him.
I took the fall for someone else.
And you were to make sure that doesn't happen again. Is that it?
You're pretty smart for FBI.
You know, Radley, you need to work on your people skills.
All right. Hayward's bank account showed a monthly payment to a guy up in Phoenix. I just talked to this guy this morning. Hayward was renting a cabin from him up near Mount Palmer.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, you do that. Oh, if Wilder asks, we never talked.
Bartle smiles and Radley goes.
I wouldn't trust him, sir.
No, I don't. But we can use him before we hang him out to dry.
A truck passes in front of Sarah's Jeep as she drives into a car park and parks. Sarah's number plate reads Sarah M. Sarah and Jessica get out of the Jeep Cherokee and go into a supermarket. They go up to a food counter.
Hi there.
Two coffees to go, please.
Right away. Do you know what happened to Hannibal?
Across the Alps?
No, my dog, he was on the train.
Oh, yes. We met in the baggage car. He was still there when I left the train.
Oh, I hope the FBI's taking good care of him.
If you don't mind my saying so, Sarah, I'm glad I don't have that job.
Oh, I know, but he's such a lamb with me. And he got that way with Peter, too. Oh, thanks. I'll take care of this. Oh, I forgot. I can't.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
You still have my purse, Jessica?
Oh, yes. Everything went on to Cyrus.
Oh, good, because I've got some things in there for Charlie.
Charlie?
Oh, my sister's boy.
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember. I think I'd better try Cyrus again before we head on. Will you take care of this?
Sure. There you go.
Thanks.
Outside.
Cyrus? It's Jessica. Oh, thank goodness you're in. No, no, I'm not going to miss the lecture. I'll be at your house in an hour. Really? Listen, I'm going to need your help.
In the FBI Communications Center, an operative types on a computer keyboard. Jessica's details appear on screen. The operative types, trace call. Searching flashes on screen. Jessica takes her credit card from the payphone.
Did you reach him?
We're all set. I just need to use the restroom before we go.
Takano's on the phone.
Okay, we'll get back to you with any further developments. Right.
Update?
The hotel owner said she dropped Fletcher off this morning near Mount Palmer. Apparently she was looking for flowers.
Yeah, right. What about the cabin?
Agent Elston just called in. Someone's been staying there.
McLeish?
He's not sure, but there's two sets of recent tire prints.
Call the DMV, get a description of her vehicle.
As Takano picks up the phone, an operative hands him a printout, which he takes to Bartles.
Sir,
yeah.
We just got a trace on a call from Mrs. Fletcher. She's at a truck stop about 50 miles from here.
They're moving. Time to call in the local police.
Why, no, now wait a minute.
You got a problem with that?
Yeah, you want every cop from Texas to California to know about this? I thought we were going to keep it from going public.
Look, Wilder, we don't have a problem. I've got a problem, and I'm going to deal with it the best way I know how. Put an APB out on McLeish's vehicle.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me.
Wilder looks furious. As Jessica gets in the Jeep Cherokee, Sarah puts a screwdriver in the glove compartment.
Engine trouble?
No, just a little insurance.
They drive off. A truck with a blue cab drives along a leafy street and stops. Guzman gets out of the cab.
Nice, pal!
Guzman takes a pager from his belt and looks at it.
El Paso.
He smiles. Sarah drives along a desert road past a lay-by where a cop car is parked.
676, 66,
the cop drives out onto the road and follows the white Jeep Cherokee.
You like country western music?
Oh, when in Rome.
The cop radios.
That's a confirmation. I'm now following a suspect vehicle headed east on Route 9 near Columbus. Please advise.
Back off and wait till we get there. Do not intercept. Let's go.
Bartles is in the FBI chopper, which flies over the desert. Radley walks up to Wilder, who's sitting at a desk looking through papers.
You better see this.
On TV.
This is David Soames coming to you live from Channel 5's Eye in the Skies newscopter. Highway Patrol is now in pursuit of a white Jeep Cherokee heading toward El Paso on Route 9. The police are refusing to say what crime has been committed, but we've just heard that the FBI has joined the chase. Stay tuned to Channel 5 for developments in this late-breaking story.
Frowning thoughtfully, Wilder switches the TV off.
Radley. Yes, he's right here. It's the director. For you.
Wilder takes the phone and affects a smile.
Hey, Ken, how's it going?
Local highway patrol is tailing the vehicle for half an hour. We've just learned that an FBI helicopter is now on the scene. Again, state and federal lawmen are closing in on two suspects driving a white Jeep Cherokee as they head towards El Paso. Authorities are remaining tight-lipped about the incident.
Bartles looks down at the white Jeep Cherokee and the cop cars. He radios the cops.
Okay, pull over.
Yes, sir.
The cops overtake another vehicle and close in on the white Jeep Cherokee. Bartles watches from the chopper as the cop cars pursue the Jeep Cherokee, which drives off the road into a lay-by. The cop cars pull over and surround it. Cops get out of their cars and aim pistols and shotguns at the Jeep.
Let's go.
The chopper lands in the lay-by. A news car has arrived. A reporter gets out and sees a cop aiming a gun at him. Terrified, he gets back in the car. Bartles gets out of the chopper and walks towards the Jeep Cherokee. He speaks into a megaphone.
Get out of the vehicle, now!
A fat, bald guy and a thin woman get out of the Jeep Cherokee. The guy has his hands up, and the woman berates him. The reporter goes to Bartles.
Excuse me, sir. Are you the agent in charge here?
There they are.
Jessica points as she and Sarah drive past in Sarah's Jeep Cherokee.
Oh, it looks like they pulled over the wrong Jeep.
I wonder if it's because they've got your license plate.
Or what's that insurance paid off?
Bartles.
What we have here is an apparent case of mistaken identity by the highway patrol. These people are not the target of any FBI investigation.
At a large house.
Cyrus said that he had a class, but he should be home soon. You want some tea?
Sure. Do you know where our stuff is?
Oh, in the spare room down there.
Sarah goes to the spare room and Jessica goes to the kitchen. Guzman rides up outside on a motorbike and parks next to Sarah's Jeep Cherokee. He dismounts and takes off his helmet. He leaves the helmet on the saddle and creeps across a terrace to a door which he opens. Guzman holds an automatic pistol in both hands and looks around the open-plan living room. Guzman slowly sidesteps towards the kitchen. In the kitchen, Jessica stands at an island worktop making tea. She has her back to Guzman as he walks in. She turns round sharply and puts her hand to her chest.
Oh, Agent Guzman, you gave me a shock.
Where's the McLeish woman?
Sarah whips the gun from his hand.
Jessica, you all right?
Yes, I am now.
What are we going to do with him?
Nothing. You see, I paged him to come here.
Because he killed Peter.
I didn't kill anyone.
You can't believe him.
I'm sorry, but I do, Sarah. Since you killed Peter Haywood yourself.
At Cyrus's house.
Okay, Mrs. Fletcher. Now, you've led every lawman from here to LA on a major wild goose chase. This better be good.
You're looking for the murderer of Peter Haywood. There she is.
Jessica, after all we've been through, how can you do this to me? I thought you were going to help me.
So did I, but not the way that you intended.
But you know what they're going to do to me. I'm going to end up just like Peter, except they're not going to be able to find the body.
Oh, forget the act, Sarah. It's over. I thought you were in trouble. And all the time, you were simply using me.
Wait a minute. You found me at the cabin, remember?
Is this leading somewhere, ladies?
There was only one thing in Peter's house which identified you. This. And the inscription on the back, "With my darling Sarah," is supposedly written by Peter, but it matches the handwriting on your dining car check.
Yes, I wrote that for Peter as a memento.
No! You wrote this and planted it in Peter's house, hoping that I'd remember the discussion we had on the train about the cabin and go up there.
Well, I hope that your novels are more believable than this.
You've got to admit this is pretty slim pickings.
Two things gave you away today, Sarah. You talked about your nephew, Charlie, as if he really existed.
But he was only a cover story for the train journey.
Exactly. And that convinced me that Sarah was just befriending me until she could get what she wanted. But something else had been nagging at me for a while. And I realized the truth when you described how quiet Hannibal is with you.
Hannibal?
Her dog. It's trained to attack on sight. Definitely the most vicious pet that I've ever seen. And it wouldn't hesitate to attack anyone who even thought of harming Sarah. And you told me that it liked Peter just as much as you.
So what?
So why didn't it attack the murderer you claimed you saw?
Because the only shooter the dog wouldn't attack is McLeish here.
No.
Sarah wanted those satellite codes at any cost, and once she killed Peter, no one else would know about her elaborate confidence scheme.
If you're right, why would she step forward as a witness to her own crime?
It was unlucky timing. Sarah intended to kill Peter and steal the codes, and after she shot him, she was disturbed by the passing police car. She covered her escape by not escaping at all. She posed as a terrified witness.
Well, let's suppose I buy all this, Mrs. Fletcher. Where are the codes now?
Well, they're in her purse.
I don't even have a purse.
No, you left it in the dining car, which seems strange to me at the time. No woman would ever leave her purse behind unless she meant to.
So what's your point?
Today she asked me if I still had the purse, but I never told you or anyone else that I'd picked it up in the dining car.
How did you know Mrs. Fletcher had it?
This is the most ridiculous story.
She could only have found that out from someone else who saw me pick it up in the dining car. You didn't leave it by mistake. You left it there to transfer the codes to whomever you're working with. And Sarah must have spoken to that person since she got off the train.
Okay. But why in heaven's name would she come back to Aqua Verde?
Or to erase any evidence of her relationship with Peter.
Whenever she came to see Hayward, they always met up in the cabin where she wouldn't be seen.
Whose idea was it to take the train to Florida?
She said she was afraid of flying.
So Sarah conned you into putting her on a train that she knew went past Aqua Verde.
So right from the start, Mata Hari here was using Hayward to get at the codes. How come she latched onto the one guy who'd found the flaw in our satellite codes?
Peter had tried to report his findings to the Pentagon.
And we know that the spy ring got information out through several times before.
And where's this purse now?
Well, it's in the safe at the hotel.
You could have contacted me directly, Mrs. Fletcher.
I did, when I used my calling card. I just didn't know that Sarah was going to switch the license plates.
You don't have anything you can take into court. I'm leaving.
I don't think so. We're keeping you under protective custody until we can sort this thing out. You were lucky this time, Guzman. But if you want to stay with this agency, you better learn to play by the book.
Bartels leaves Guzman standing beside Sarah. Jessica runs out after Bartels.
Wait a minute. What about Richard Loomis? Yeah. Sarah was already off the train, so she couldn't possibly have killed him.
That was a local murder, Mrs. Fletcher. He didn't work for the NSA.
No, but they had to be connected. I mean, chances are that if you find his killer, you're going to find Sarah's accomplices.
You're probably right. But I'm going to worry about that later. First, I've got to retrieve a 64-gigabyte silicon chip. Come on, let's go.
Bartels goes with Takano.
A silicon chip. Now he tells me.
Jessica goes over to Guzman.
Agent Guzman, it's critical that we get back to Aqua Verde as quickly as possible.
I can't do that without Arthur. The hell with it. You've been right so far. Now what?
Well, the sheriff's son. I think he has the satellite codes.
They go. Sarah looks at the agent who's standing with her.
I need to call a lawyer. Now.
Joe's standing outside the sheriff's office playing with the Game Boy. He has a catcher's mitt tucked under his arm. Jim drives up in his 4x4 and looks at Joe.
Joe, now you had baseball practice this afternoon.
Yeah, I'm just heading down there.
And go before I take that thing away from you.
Joe walks off. Guzman drives through town in a black car with Jessica beside him. Jessica makes a call on her cell phone, then hangs up.
Still busy. How long can it be busy?
Jessica shares a worried look with Guzman. Joe wanders down a street playing with the Game Boy. A blue car slowly crawls along the street behind him. Jessica finally gets through to Jim.
Jim, it's Jessica Fletcher.
Hi, how you doing?
Jim, do you know where little Joe is?
He just went down to the park. Why?
Well, he may be in some danger, and it's all my fault. Just don't let him, all that electronic game, out of your sight.
Okay.
Jim drives up to a field where kids are playing baseball. He gets out of the 4x4 and runs over to a guy.
Oh, good boy.
Haven't seen him.
Jim runs back to his 4x4, gets in, and drives off. Joe walks along, head bowed, staring at the small screen of the handheld electronic game. He sits on a bench and keeps playing. The blue car parks. The driver, who is wearing black leather gloves, fixes a silencer to an automatic pistol and cocks it. As the driver opens the car door and steps out, Jim drives up. The driver gets back in the car and closes the door. Jim gets out of his 4x4 and runs over to Joe.
Joe, you okay? I've been looking all over for you. Why didn't you go to practice?
I just played my game before I go down to the park.
The blue car glides away. Jessica and Guzman arrive.
Oh, thank goodness you found him.
Hi, Mrs. Fletcher.
Hi, Joe. I'm afraid I'm going to have the game back.
I promise not to play as much.
You do?
Only when Dad says.
Good, because I've ordered you one with the new game cartridges in it, and it'll be waiting for you at the drugstore.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, we're gonna get it later. You're going to the park.
Thanks for keeping this safe for me.
Jim and Joe go. Jessica hands the Game Boy to Guzman, who opens the battery compartment and takes out a silicon chip.
That's it?
Yep. Doesn't look like much.
Well, we'd better get it back to the NSA.
I'll be happy when that happens. This job has been screwy from the start. You're about the only person that didn't have a double identity.
Jessica frowns.
Wait a minute. On the train, Sarah's name was Judy Taylor.
So?
Well, suppose someone apart from Loomis or the federal authorities calls Sarah by her real name.
It'd have to be her contact, then.
It has to be. Which means we know who shot Loomis.
We do?
I'm gonna need this.
The Game Boy. People take their seats in a lecture theater. Jessica is there wearing a smart blue and white jacket and white trousers. Holding the Game Boy and some papers, she glances at Bartles, then at Radley, who are amongst the crowd. Jessica makes her way to the front. Jack and Millie see her.
Oh, there she is.
Yo-ho, Jessica.
Jessica smiles.
Break a leg.
Jack, that's for the theater, not a lecture.
You're right, dear.
Cyrus.
Jessica.
She kisses suave, gray-haired Cyrus on the cheek.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my great pleasure to introduce today's guest speaker. Now, you all know her as a distinguished author. You may not be as aware of her academic credentials as a teacher of both writing and criminology. My good friend, Jessica Fletcher.
She stands behind a lectern. Bartles and Radley watch, frowning. Jack and Millie grin cheerily. Jessica unfolds her papers.
Thank you, Cyrus. Thank you. I was going to talk to you today about my latest novel. But instead, I've decided to talk to you about something else. And since every good story deserves a good title, I've decided to call this one Murder and How Not to Get Away with It. It's a tale of intrigue and deception, where those who seem the most innocent turn out to be cold-blooded killers. I do hope you'll all be able to stay for the entire plot. It starts with a simple electronic game and an eastbound train.
Jack and Millie's faces fall. ITFC audio description. Thank you.